I'm very happy now to welcome Dr. Timothy Buckman. He's professor of surgery and founding director of the Center for Critical Care at Emory University. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's a privilege to be here.
So if I understand correctly, the field of complex systems science and the massive computational power we now have at our disposal have allowed researchers to come to some new understandings of health and physiological stability. First of all, I was hoping that you could explain the concept of homeostasis, which has long been a basic principle of medical theory and practice.
Well, you're correct. It certainly has long been a tenet of medical theory and practice. The word homeostasis was coined by a Harvard physiologist, Walter B. Cannon, in the early days of the 20th century. And it followed on the idea that the purpose of physiology was to maintain some kind of constancy within a cell, constancy within a tissue, even constancy within an entire organism. Think of the original theory as a negative feedback loop, the same way negative feedback loops are within the cruise control of your car. You set it at 45 miles an hour, and the car will do whatever is necessary to maintain exactly 45 miles an hour. Well, that's what we clinicians did for most of my lifetime. In fact, up until a few years ago, the idea was to help our patients adjust to an environment of constancy and to maintain the things we measure: temperature, heart rate, blood pressure, even the intervals of the menstrual cycle, just as constant as we could.
And so in that way of thinking, stability equals regularity.
That's correct. That's what we thought for so many years, that a stable system was able to buffer any of the outside changes and maintain a sort of constancy to the internal milieu. And what happened was that we actually got around, with the incredible power of modern high-speed computers, the ability to, for example, take a temperature with a thermistor as opposed to sticking a mercury thermometer in somebody's mouth. And to our surprise and somewhat to our consternation, we discovered that healthy people were anything but regular.
So instead of the kind of regularity that we sort of were striving for, and that in, I think many people still are in their way of thinking, I mean, it's a mindset as well as a kind of medical practice, instead you have constant and continual adaptation to the environment.
That's correct. And when you think about it, healthy people not only are constantly adapting to their environment, they're changing their environment, so they have to adapt to it. Think of some of the healthy folks that you and I both know, and I'll bet you that they spend some time in their day in quiet meditation. Then they go outside and get on a bicycle or head over to the fitness center and get on the treadmill and get their pulse rate and their breathing up. They eat at varying times of the day. They change the size and the amount of food that they eat. In fact, they revel in this kind of exposure to the outside world.
So in one of the articles that I was reading by you, you used the term non-equilibrium system. What does that mean, and what does it look like?
Well, that comes from concepts of physics and chemistry, and it's important to think a little bit about what equilibrium means. It means that a small perturbation from whatever state something it is in, that is, for example, taking a pendulum and allowing it to swing, very quickly it'll settle down to that position that it's hanging straight down, because that's where gravity is telling it to go. But in fact, in living systems, in biology, we all function very far from equilibrium. Our pendula, if you will, aren't supposed to run down. Our heart is supposed to continue to beat. Our lungs are supposed to continue to breathe. So we're in a different realm of mathematics and a different realm of physics when we start trying to take apart what biology looks like and get to some core principles of how biology actually operates.
So a human body has all these different systems going from the cellular or subcellular level to organs and kind of macro scale level, and there are many feedback loops within the human body's functioning that keep it healthy. And the way that you're thinking about health, what does health mean? What are the signs of good health if it's not a kind of constant stability and great regularity?
That's a terrific question. I think that what we used to mean by health, the idea of a single perfect state, has been replaced by a very different concept, and it's the ability to access multiple different states when, where, and however needed. Think about it for just a moment. Imagine that you're walking along and suddenly you're facing a staircase, and you start to climb the stairs. Within a few beats of your heart, you actually have to significantly increase blood flow to the muscles of your legs, and you also have to increase the amount of oxygen that's being delivered by that blood flow to the muscles of your legs so that you don't peter out and stop on the third step. That kind of adaptive capacity, the ability to, if you will, turn on a dime and change your physiology, is really the signature of health, as opposed to the ability to simply sit in a chair all day.
And so when the human body gets disrupted by various stressors, environmental or whatever they are, and it goes into a pattern of ill health, the body tries to compensate. But when it can't, looking at it in the way that we're talking about, what's going wrong?
Well, when the body can't compensate, one of two things happens. First, the person changes his or her behavior so that the stresses are less. And we do that all the time as a matter of routine. It's just a question of where we stop. For example, if you get onto a treadmill and you start increasing the speed and increasing the angle, there's going to come a point where you simply can't do anymore. You're running flat out, and eventually you either stop or reduce the speed or reduce the gradient. So we're constantly pushing the limits of our own performance. But when the stress is so severe, so sudden, and so uncontrollable that the body can't compensate, that's when people end up not only in the doctor's office, not only in the hospital, but actually in the intensive care unit. And that's where I spend most of my clinical time, trying to figure out how to get people back to a state where they are able to compensate for the normal variations that we encounter on a daily basis.
We're talking to Dr. Timothy Buckman, who will be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the James A. Little Theater. It's part of the Santa Fe Institute's ongoing lecture series. So let's talk for a moment about the intensive care unit. One of the things that you see there is something called multiple organ dysfunction syndrome. First of all, explain what that is.
Each of us is blessed with many body systems, the cardiovascular system, consisting of the heart and blood vessels, the airways and the lungs, which exchange oxygen from the atmosphere and allow us to get rid of carbon dioxide as a waste product, our kidneys that so beautifully balance both the amount of water we have in our bodies and the dissolved electrolytes that are necessary to keep cells healthy. In severe illness, often following an overwhelming infection or an injury such as a motor vehicle collision, these various organ systems fail to function appropriately. Often the tissues themselves are uninjured, That is, when you look at the cells or tissues under the microscope, they look perfectly normal. Their architecture is normal. They're shaped normally. But they fail to do the jobs that I've described. And we call that not single organ dysfunction, but when we have this cascade of failure, if you will, we call it the multiple organ dysfunction syndrome.
And how does thinking about the body in the kind of in the complex systems way that you're doing help you understand and treat multiple organ dysfunction syndrome?
Historically, we used to think that if we simply stabilized each organ and we made each organ as regular as we possibly could, that is, we set the lungs to a very rigid performance standard with a ventilator breathing exactly every 6 seconds with exactly a pint of air. If we set the heart going at an exactly specific rate and controlled the blood pressure within very tight limits, we thought that that was the best way to treat patients, to put them, if you will, inside a very rigid framework. It turns out in recent years that we've discovered that's not the best way to treat patients. We have to allow patients a certain amount of flexibility, or more accurately, we have to provide their physiology with a certain amount of variability in order to accelerate and optimize the recovery from critical illness.
So what do you do differently?
Things we do differently is are numerous, but they include allowing our ventilators adapt to the needs of the patient, not only different from patient to patient, but in fact from minute to minute and all the way down breath to breath. We allow patients more latitude in the various physiologic parameters that we monitor, such as heart rate. And in fact, we encourage variability by giving medications that slow the heart down. And as we slow the heart down, it turns out that the heart is able to find its own variability.
Is there any analogy outside the human body that would help people to understand this? And I guess the reason I'm thinking about this is because we recently did some programs on climate change, and I was thinking about the many systems that go into the global ecosystem and how when a number of feedback loops are disrupted at the same time, they're all in various complicated ways dependent on each other, bad things happen.
There are many analogies, and the issue of interacting systems is applicable at all levels of biology, from the tiniest bacterium all the way up to the most complex ecosystem. I think one of the best examples actually occurs within an ecosystem that lives inside every human body, the flora that inhabit our intestines. It may come as a surprise to your listeners that if we were to take any one of you and physically count the number of cells that you have in your body, there would be between 10 and 100-fold more bacterial cells inside your intestine than there are you cells. In fact, that you are at this very moment more bacteria, if you will, than you are yourself. Those bacteria that inhabit your intestine have their own ecosystem. And we've discovered, as so many of your listeners have discovered, that when we disrupt that ecosystem by giving antibiotics intended to help you overcome an infection, that we actually cause problems with the intestinal flora. And in fact, we spend an enormous amount of time creating the new latitude for that flora to recover. We do it medically. We do it with our nutrition. For example, yogurt with live cultures. All those things are intended to encourage the restoration of latitude and variability that is really a signature of health.
So you have many systems, again, from the microscopic level to the macro level, interacting with each other and in a dynamic relationship to one another. Do we know the mechanisms by which all these systems talk to each other?
We know some of the mechanisms, but what we don't know, and we may never know, is how to engineer the interrelationships. In fact, the interrelationships form spontaneously, and that's the signature of a complex system. A complex adaptive system creates rich behaviors from a very simple set of rules without any engineering whatsoever. It differs from a complicated or engineered system like an airplane, where every rivet, every connecting rod, every cable, every piece of aluminum has to be put in to a position just so. In fact, this marvelously complex system that we call the human body is not put together with a blueprint. There are no plans that basically say, put a thumb in exactly this position, put a finger in exactly that position. It comes out of a program embedded in our DNA that somehow manages to generate the precise relationships so that we all come out looking pretty much the same. It is very much an evolutionary process, both on the long time scales that we think about evolution, millions of years, to the evolution that occurs during gestation, the 9 months that we spend inside the womb, to the years of our lives, and in fact to the hours and minutes of the day.
When we age, the mechanisms that you're talking about begin to break down. What does that look like, and what do we know about? I mean, are there any things that your studies are helping us to understand so that we can keep these functions less brittle?
That's a very important question. Aging is inevitable. The arrow of time reverses for no man. On the other hand, the frailty that accompanies aging may not be inevitable. Each of us knows a number of people in our circle of friends and acquaintances who seem to retain some kind of healthy dynamic even as they advance into the later years of life, often being very active and vital until a few hours or days before their death. What we've come to understand is that regularly challenging the body, as with exercise, as with changing environments, is very important to delay and perhaps even prevent the development of frailty. You have to exercise not only the body as a whole, but the various systems in order to keep them vital and resilient. Different from our environment 200 years ago, when the only forms of power that we had were wind power, water power, horsepower, and human power, we have created in our modern world an environment that not only doesn't encourage, but in fact discourages the types of activities that evolution had programmed for us as being important to a happy, healthy, and fulfilling the late years in our lives. So I think the message here is that keeping active, maintaining a level of activity and exercise, varying our exposure in terms of both our minds and bodies, probably very important in preventing the frailty that so many of us have come to accept as an inevitable part of aging.
What kind of therapies do you think that this line of inquiry, thinking about the body in terms of complex systems, is most likely to yield?
I think that the treatments that are on the horizon are exciting, because they begin to recognize that the goal is not a specific target in terms of things that we measure, a blood pressure or a heart rate or similar, but in fact developing a latitude in each of these measures. It is, in a very real sense, a fusion of Eastern medical concepts, the yin and yang, if you will, to the more Western concepts that we have embraced over the past 100 years, that for every problem there is a cure, and that cure comes in the form of a pill or an operation.
Just as an aside, when I was in college, I knew a group of Harvard medical students, and one of them told me that term that they used a lot, which was called dying a Harvard death, which was that all your measurable numbers were perfect, but you were still dead.
And it's very true. We can be engaged in making the numbers perfect, but we are more than a collection of numbers. We are more than a collection of tissues and cells and organelles. They have to function with some degree of harmony, and often allowing one or another or even many of those aspects to be not quite perfect actually presents for us a more harmonious whole than having each of the systems rigidly perfect.
So what will you be talking about tonight?
Tonight I'm going to talk about heart failure. What it is, it's been in the news recently with a couple of high-profile figures, and we're going to dissect apart what heart failure actually consists of. We're going to talk a little bit about how the electrocardiogram can give us insights into the progression of heart failure. We're going to talk a little bit about how we might use this type of information to create different descriptions of what health and disease look like. We'll talk a little bit about some new mathematics and that might contribute to this in a way that will be, I think, highly understandable and enjoyable to folks who are not scientists, who are folks who go through their daily lives wondering what they can do to improve their own health and the health of the folks that they care about.
Dr. Buckman, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.